WLFP Braddock.
Good morning. What do we do today? Good morning, world, is what we're going to do today. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we have a guest on the line already since it's the season for this. It's called Barbecue Nation. That's what the book is called.
Well, hold on a second. Can I say good morning? I didn't even get to say good morning. When you change the intro, I don't even get to say a word.
Well, you could have waited.
Well, what I quickly need to introduce here is a comment that this is not a party political broadcast.
Okay, that's why you wanted to talk. I see. Now, he's saying that, listeners, because we have Fred Thompson on the line, but not that Fred Thompson. We've got Fred Thompson, who is the author of Barbecue Nation. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Okay. You may be able to note from his accent that he's a southern boy from Raleigh, North Carolina. So I imagine this interest in barbecue comes absolutely natural to you.
Well, it's been part of my life since I was born. I can't remember when some form of barbecue wasn't around. And it was also kind of the center point of a lot of family reunions.
Right.
So you started out with your pacifier dunked in barbecue sauce?
Did what with my what sauce?
Your pacifier or dummy, whatever you call them.
Your binky.
Your binky, okay.
Yes. We were, probably right out of that little silver spoon that supposedly was put in my mouth, according to my parents, somewhere.
Uh-huh. Now, you are a food writer, food stylist, and culinary developer. Now, I'm not sure what a culinary developer is. Do menus?
Well, that's pretty easy. I'll do about anything with food for money.
Ah.
That's the best way to say it. But I have clients in Tokyo. I have clients in this country where I work with their research and development people and trying to get flavor into foods, as well as the science of making things shelf stable and all that kind of stuff. So
I see.
That's part of what I do. And I also develop a lot of recipes for different organizations, magazines, as well as Weight Watchers and things like that.
And you teach?
Yes, ma'am, I do. That's some of my, I think teaching probably is my favorite thing because I get immediate reaction to the recipes that we're working on and also get the best ideas from these folks that that come to these cooking classes.
Yeah, you go to the Viking Culinary Center as you teach there, and a friend of ours has a cooking school, and Viking outfitted it, so I've been trying to figure out how I can get Viking to outfit my kitchen.
Well, once you figure it out, if you would, please give me a call, because I don't know.
That'll be fine, but this book is an incredible achievement. I mean, it's properly called Nation, because if there's a barbecue specialist across the country who's not in this book, I don't know who they are.
Well, I really had a great time writing this book, and I think it's an important book, and from the standpoint that there are a few professional pitmaster kind of folks in there, but for the most part, these are folks, just regular people. Most of them don't have, they're not professional cooks or anything like that. This is what they do on the weekends. This is what they do in their backyard. This is the smells that come off their grill that drive their neighbors crazy.
Now, you met people you'd never heard of before. You just sort of got passed along a vine of connections?
Oh, I've done everything. I invaded a child's first birthday party down in Florida and actually got a great recipe from Tim Huckins and his wife. And I met a wonderful cook. I was taking a little time off, and I was touring the Jelly Belly factory of all places, those little teeny tiny jelly beans.
Oh, yeah.
And met a group of Canadians up there, and we talked about steelhead salmon.
Oh.
I've gotten in my Jeep and ridden through campgrounds at holiday time with my windows rolled down, and when the smell was right, I stopped and got out.
Geez.
And took the pad and introduced myself. I'm probably lucky I haven't been shot. But
Now, there was room for a 351st barbecue chef, first named Peter, who you missed out.
Well,
I don't know what happened. Perhaps you didn't come north of the border enough.
Well, I would have liked to have. We did have some Canadian. I think there's three Canadian recipes in there.
No, I was thinking in north of the border of the South, the Mason-Dixon line.
We did a lot of that.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
You know, there's Ohio. There's Detroit, Michigan. There's New York City. There's, you know, Seattle. That was one of my best stories. A lawyer by the name of Peter McNee, who, when he was in college, was a VISTA volunteer as a poverty lawyer and got placed down in Georgia and fell in love with Georgia-style barbecue. And,
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so he started, you know, he started his own little barbecue event up there in Seattle, and it's quite the do, and he's a very interesting fellow. So, yeah. No, we have the bases covered, and besides, with the way that the country has moved around lately, I didn't have any problem finding those north of the border folks south of the border, south of that grits line, okay?
Yeah, there's been this whole thing with... not just barbecue, but with Southern cooking. We had the Lee brothers on, and their cookbook got the best cookbook of the year by James Beard.
Yeah, it's a fantastic cookbook.
And it all started with boiled peanuts.
Well, they're an interesting couple, couple of guys. I've known them for a while, and we're both part of the Southern Foodways Alliance, which sort of protects Southern culture and Southern foodways. And
yeah.
They did an excellent job on that book. But you're right, barbecue, the noun... as we sort of refer to it in the South, and all types of Southern cooking, it's kind of like the last regional cuisine that's left that hasn't really been disturbed a whole lot. And I think there is a national interest in Southern cooking. It's the ultimate comfort food in a lot of ways. And the country, I think, as a whole has moved in that direction. So, we've got lots of good Southern cooks, and we'll teach anybody.
Right, yeah. We were at the Charleston Food and Wine Festival and interviewed a bunch of people from Lewis Austin.
Yeah, Lewis is a close friend of mine. Lewis,
yeah, I'm sure Lewis he would
character.
Be. Well, all those people with the Southern, what's the Foodways?
Southern Foodways Alliance, right?
Yeah, they're all great people.
Fred, talk to our listeners about how the book's organized.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's organized sort of the way you might imagine it being. I mean, there's obviously a beef chapter, a pork chapter, a chicken chapter, fish and shellfish. But we've also got a chapter on appetizers, things that you can do totally on the grill. A lot of folks didn't believe me when I told, you know, when I got this recipe for smoking almonds on your grill. You can do your own smoked almonds or, you know, stuffed figs and that kind of thing. Plus, we have sides that are appropriate. What would happen a lot of times when I would get myself invited to dinner, basically is what I did more times than not, is that it became sort of a neighborhood event. This food writer's coming, and he wants to look at our goat cheese-topped, honey-marinated filet mignon. Well, you know, we've got 10 other people there, and they've all brought something. You know, it's the ultimate potluck. So not only did I find great grilling recipes, I found these great side dishes and great desserts. And, you know, and a lot of them were just too good to not include in the book.
But you also explain to the listeners, you also do little portraits of the people that give you the recipes.
Well, this book is as much about the story as it is the recipe. This is a very human book, and it's one that I'm very proud to say that a lot of people have said, you know, whether I ever cook out of it or not, I've enjoyed reading the book. These people are important. They're important in their own way. We probably need to do a much better job of chronicling recipes that are not chef-driven or not necessarily for-profit kind of thing, but, you know, just what we enjoy, what we kick our shoes off and sit out on the back deck and have a good time doing.
Yeah, now, those who want to get this book can pick it up right off of our website, www.onthemenuradio.com. Go to... OTM bookshelf, and you just click on and order it right away, called Barbecue Nation. And do you have your own personal website? You do so many things.
Well, I have website design is not one of my specialties, but I do have a website, www.barbecue-nation.com, that is up and running. It's not as perfect as I want it, but what I'd like for that site to become is sort of a clearinghouse for us amateur barbecue guys and us amateur grillers, guys and girls, and hopefully that site can become a point of discussion for people across the country.
Most everybody we've interviewed about barbecuing goes with the wood or the briquettes or something like that, and you just clearly come out in favor of gas.
Well, I have gas and charcoal grills, and during the week, you know, we're all a little crazed. And quite frankly, gas is more convenient. It's, you know, turn the dial, wait 15 minutes, and you're cooking. And on the weekends, I tend to use charcoal more because I have more time, and I might be doing something that takes more of a smoking process or a longer cooking process. Either one works well, and I tried to balance this book as to who was using gas and who was using charcoal, but I didn't influence that. I mean, these recipes are for, this is, you know, Mark Cheeseman out of Corpus Christi, Texas, you know, uses gas, and he's, you know, that's the way he's always cooked, so that's his recipe is on a gas grill.
But you state in your introduction that you feel that we've all evolved in this barbecue to the point where gas is a natural.
I think it is. It's easier. The gas grills today are so much better than they were years ago. You know, the top names like Weber are making just grills that you can do so many things with and control the heat so well with. And, you know, it's just a matter of getting the wood flavor or the charcoal flavor going through there. And that's pretty simple because wood chips are very available out there nowadays. And, it's, you know, you just dampen them, put them in a wad of aluminum foil, punch some holes in them, and throw them on the grill, and you're smoking. So,
well, Fred, we're running out of time before we take a break. Is there one last thing you'd like to say?
If you're not grilling, just get out there and do it. I mean, it's simple and it's easy, and it's, you know, and trust your own taste buds. You know, just have fun with your own taste buds.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you very much for calling
thank
and
you.
Talking to us, and we'll do it again with your next book.
I appreciate it.
Okay, Fred.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And we'll take a break now.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details, 412-661-6001, 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Call ASP Station now for details, 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Teach your child the responsible use of online resources. Tell them up front what your rules are for internet use and the consequences of breaking them. Take some time to explore valuable uses of the internet with your child. This safety tip brought to you by Pennsylvania Learners Online Cyber School. For more information on how your child can attend classes from home at no cost to you, visit www.palearnersonline.net or call the Allegheny Intermediate Unit at 412-394-5700.
Well, I was a little nervous. First time I went into an elementary school classroom as a junior achievement volunteer. But when I saw how eager the kids were, I knew it was going to be all right. They're so thrilled you're there.
If you've ever wondered what you can do to help kids expand their horizons, find out about our new elementary school volunteer program. Call 1-800-THE-NEW-JA. That's 1-800-THE-NEW-JA. A public service message brought to you by Junior Achievement and the Ad Council.
Peter Haig, we're going to be...
Hold on a second. Don't forget, you can follow all the excitement of the On The Menu family at www.onthemenuradio.com.
Right.
We always say that here, but...
I know.
Sometimes
I like to do things differently.
You like to be unpredictable.
I do. So, anyhow, here we are in Columbus, and a very nice family wedding.
Just a quick introduction. Many of you perhaps think On the Menu only goes to places like New York City and San Francisco and New Orleans, where there are wonderful places to eat. But sometimes we get to go to other places, we did.
And we did find wonderful places to eat. The rehearsal dinner was at that wonderful
called Bassi Italia.
Bassi Italia. If you're going to be in Columbus, check that out. It's a very contemporary. The entrance is off of an alley, but don't be put off by that. It's a very nice experience. And then we went off on our own to a restaurant that's been around for quite some time now called Spaggio and had an absolutely smashing good time. On the Menu is in Columbus, Ohio, at Spaggio, talking to one of our favorite chefs, Chef Hubert Seifert. Hello again.
Hi, how are you? It's great. Great to be with you.
It's actually, I'm doing much better now that I've tasted your first course and am well into the second course of foie gras and matched with wines. Your background is so interesting, Chef. I'm going to jump back to tell our listeners where you were born and how you got into this business at age 14.
Okay, I'm born in Germany, in Aachen, the city of Charlemagne. And, my father was in the beverage business. And so after the war, I'm born in 47, driving around with him and seeing, upcoming restaurants. I always enjoyed the food, and I said I want to become a chef. And so when I was 14, I became an apprentice in nearby Aachen at a place, did my apprenticeship, and then from there on I started to travel, became a journeyman. And so today it's 45 years, more or less, from the day when I started. I started in April. Now we are in April. It's 45 years cooking and enjoying food and being with people.
How did you end up in Columbus, Ohio?
This is really an interesting story. I was working in South America for a German company, and we always had to fly in with a company. I forgot now. And the airline company were out of Florida. So we had to travel South America, Florida, and back to Germany. And I had a friend in Florida who I went to visit. And he said to me, Hubert, I have to go to Columbus, Ohio and do a job for my boss. Would you like to come along? And I said, I really don't think so, because my English was not in existence and I didn't know Columbus, Ohio. But he convinced me. I came up with him. We did a job. The person who we worked for also owned the Bengals and the Reds in Cincinnati. He's big in construction. And so we did this party for him. And then after we returned back to the house, the owner of the Bengals and the Reds, he said to me, Hubert, you are not leaving, you're staying. So that's how I ended up in Columbus, Ohio.
How many years was that? Why did you end up staying so long?
Because I think I enjoyed it. It felt very much like home because we have the Four Seasons and the people are very friendly. It's a great town to be in. And obviously, my wife agreed also to do it. And I think the money was good. In these days, it's 27 years ago. It was the right thing at the right time. I mean, like you said here, being in the right place at the right time, and that happened to us.
Explain your various enterprises here. We are in your wine shop, wine bar. Explain the other operation.
Yeah, we are right now sitting here at Spaggio Cellars, what is part of Spaggio. This is a wine store, retail store. I think we have quite a great selection of wines here. And also, you can sit down and sample the wines you see here on the shelf and have some food with it. So it became really a hangout, and it's not only for the wine connoisseurs, it's now young people who are really using it, coming in and try great wines. I mean, they starting with a $10 bottle, and there are some people now I have seen over the last 8 years growing into the wine experts. So this is one thing. That's Spaggio Cellars. We are open 6 days a week from 11 in the morning until 1 at night, and then we have right next to it Spaggio's, what is now in existence for 25 years. We opened in 1981, and that's a sit-down restaurant where we have from 11 till 11 at night. And I think a great menu where you, whatever you are in the mood for, you can have. And also from the price structure, it's not high-end or low-end. It's right in between so that people, they can come more or less twice a week, three times a week. And I think in our industry, it's very important to have that. And then we have a third location, what is five doors down from us here on Grandview Avenue, called Aubergine, what is a private dinner club. And this is open from Tuesday to Saturday, but you have to be a member when you want to join there.
Chef, before we talk further, I'm looking at the logo on this placemat. Explain the name Spaggio.
Okay, when we changed from Gourmet Market into Spaggio, and I had a friend of mine, his name was Shelley Berman, and Shelley, he said to me, he said, I will come up with a name. And then, you know, once we had this, I said, you know, what does it mean, Spaggio? I don't know. It doesn't make sense. I mean, no, he said, think about it. Divide the name into two different parts. One is spa and one is geo. So we're talking about healthy and good things from the world and then geo for the world, geographic. So I said, oh my God, that is a stroke of genius. So, and that's how the name came together, Spaggio. And then on the end, when you see the big red dot with the crossbar above it, it's the Japanese sign for the world. So that's how the name Spaggio came together.
Now, your cooking style is essentially European, we discussed, but you do have some influences from Asia, especially Japan. How is that?
When you cook your typical European food, after a while, when you do it every day, it becomes a little boring to me. So I need to clean my palate or whatever, however you would say that. And I like to get these flavors, these Asian flavors, especially Japanese. I think they are very subtle and I like to go and eat there. And so then I traveled to Asia. And once I got tried this and enjoyed it, that's when we influenced our cuisine with some of the Asian, you know, Japanese and Chinese flavors. And that's how I think our cuisine came together. Plus, the abundance of product we have here in the Midwest, you know. Right now, the morels are coming and the fiddleheads and all these things, great tomatoes and lamb. So by creating this and using these ingredients we have and come up with flavors and put them together, that's what I really enjoy. And I don't want to call it fusion cuisine because when I hear fusion cuisine, I get very confused.
Right. Fusion. I don't want to miss the opportunity for you to tell listeners about the wonderful event you do here every year for hospice, for Children's Hospital.
Yes, we have done an event for hospice. It started off in Cincinnati, I would say 18 years ago. And then this group of chefs, there are 14 of us out of Chicago, Dallas, New York, L.A. And we get together once a year, and usually it's the last Monday in February. And we come together, we spend 3 days together, exchange ideas, have a lot of wine, have some great food together. And the camaraderie is so unbelievable, and people start to share new ideas, new recipes, and so on. And we do this, and then we cook. We have 240 people usually attend the event. And then we raise money for hospice, for Children's Hospital. And this last, we did this last February, we raised close to $100,000 in one night. So it's fabulous. And it's on one hand to bring great chefs and great friends together and do something for this event.
How does someone get on your mailing list?
You have to enjoy great wine and great food, and I will make it happen. You will be on it. But you can also go online, and you go onto Spaggio, onto our website. It's www.spaggio.com, and, you know, get some information, and also give me a call. I mean, I'd be happy to talk to people. You know, it's a very simple thing. It's 614-486-1114. And ask for Chef Hubert.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's an honor to have you.
And it was fun.
It was a whole lot of fun. He is a delight.
We got there at noon. I think we left around 3:30.
I think so. And he sat down and talked with us.
He talked with us the whole time.
And, yeah, it was more fun.
So it's obviously somebody else was in the kitchen.
Well, he kept going back and forth.
I think he went back to the kitchen to bring out the dishes.
Somebody
else is working there. Anyway, it's an interesting place to go. Check your directions carefully because it's not in downtown Columbus. It's a little outside of the city, but on a very charming street that's well worth a visit in its own right. And as Anne's pointing out, it's time to take a break.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding. An old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at. And I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
Did you know that Pennsylvania has a seatbelt law? We do, and we're enforcing it. This is Colonel Miller, Commissioner of the Pennsylvania State Police. If you are stopped and cited for speeding or any other violation, and you are not wearing your seatbelt, you are liable to get two tickets, one for speeding, one for not wearing your seatbelt. That's two tickets, two fines. When it comes to seatbelts, click it or ticket. This message brought to you by Governor Edward G. Rendell, the Pennsylvania State Police, and PennDOT.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers. Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
The flagship station of the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. This is 1550 WLFP, Pittsburgh.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back to On the Menu. You know, Rabbit.
Yes.
It's listening to the recordings makes me relive the occasions and have all that fun and all that good food all over again.
There you go. and we're not going to miss a beat.
No.
Going on to our next interview segments, which are part of the Daniel Ballou Dining Empire in New York City. He's the nicest man
in the world.
He's a very nice man, and he's promoting young chefs into these other restaurants that he's developed, and they do a wonderful job. And our first stop was DB Bistro, which is on in Midtown Manhattan on, I think it's either West 44th or West 45th, between 5th and 6th Avenue. And after you talk to the chef, after you listen to talking to the chef, I'm sure you'll want to go there.
Chef Daniel Boulou has built a wonderful empire of restaurants, and he's actually built this with his ingenuity and also a lot of ability to recruit great talent. We are now in, have just had lunch actually at DB Bistro Moderne, and we're going to talk to his chef de cuisine, Olivier Mueller.
Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm fine, particularly after the wonderful lunch you provided. Describe the concept of this restaurant, if you would, please.
I mean, it's typically French food with a contemporary touch into it. We following the season, working with fresh vegetable from the market, fish coming from different places, and then I will describe it that way.
And it's the most casual of Daniel's restaurants, right?
Yeah, I would say so. But then we have a crowd of a business at lunch coming from the magazine, from bankers, from different type of media. And then at night, it's more theater crowd for the first section of it, and then New Yorker afterward. I mean, it's a big mix of New Yorker, I would say.
Yes, in fact, it's a great opportunity for people going to and from theater to have a great meal.
Yes. Yes, we open around 5:30, and then people can have a quick meal with very great food in a casual place, and then go to the theater happy.
Now, give us a little of your background. You are from Alsace.
That's right. I'm from Strasbourg, and Strasbourg is as well a place where culture are mixed together. I mean, coming from close to Germany, from Belgium, from Switzerland, we have a big Jewish community, a big Muslim community, so I grew in a place where culture were already mixed together, and then moved in New York 6 years ago, and then worked for Daniel in his different restaurants, and then I've been at DB now for the past 4 years as a chef de cuisine.
Actually, you come from a city with probably one of the most beautiful cathedrals I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's true. The Cathedral of Strasbourg is such a beautiful cathedral.
Now, you've been cooking since you were 16. You've had plenty of restaurant experience and had plenty before you came to the U.S., right?
That's right. I was a confirmed chef and I came here. I wanted to travel. I wanted to test what is America is about. And then my first move was really to learn English, travel, and then test that culture. Culture which is different than mine. I was curious too.
Now, what would you describe as your primary focus on, I don't like to say style of cooking, but what kinds of things do you really love?
I always start with produce. I mean, as we say, we follow the season, so it can be the fava beans, asparagus, or a type of fish or meat. And then I try to prepare the way I like to eat it. And then that's how I conceive my menu. And then I will make people smile, make them feel comfortable, and eat healthy food.
Now, listeners, I must tell you that this man is slim, elegant, and really easy on the eyes, and he cooks like an angel. What kinds of things did you find that were really odd when you came to the United States in terms of food?
I wouldn't say nothing really shocked me. I mean, every culture, every style. I mean, I wanted to show my background, and my mom used to teach me how to cook. She's been my first mentor, and then I like to share what I come from with the other, and then nothing shocked me. I like simple food as well. And then a good burger or hot dog is fine for me. But then when I can, I enjoy a good meal.
Tell us about your famous burger.
Oh, burger started when the restaurant opened. It was Daniel's idea. And he, as well as I do, he liked burger. And then he wanted to add a French twist into it. So mixing some rich red wine bread, short ribs, foie gras and truffles with homemade Parmesan bun, confit tomato. I mean, a lot of good things into this traditional American dish, and then it turned into the burger we have at DB.
The information I got on the DB Bistro Moderne is that it was Daniel Boulou's interpretation of the new generation of Parisian bistros, whose classically trained chefs, which you are, they offer their creative take in a casual environment. But always central to this, as I understand it, is a fixation almost on the very freshest, best seasonal ingredients. Is that true?
That's very true. Right now we're working with morels, peas, We have some rams, which are wild leeks. We using soft shell crab, but then as the season move, we're following the season, and then that's how I grew up, and then that's how I've been raised, and then I love to share that with my customer.
Now, our first course actually was a dish that you grew up with. Explain it to us.
I serve you a tarte flambée, which is a very thin crust covered with fromage blanc, crème fraîche and bacon, and then it's baked into a stone oven, and then that's a very typical Alsatian dish. We have in some Wienstube restaurant that with a glass of Riesling. That's something very special, and then I serve that as a order of a canapé. But then following was some snail with some spätzle, which are also a typical Alsatian pasta, I would say, with some garlic parsley broth, and then mushroom, and then the dish is very popular here. I mean, snail is not the easiest dish to sell, but then we do them pretty well. And then you have a refreshing tuna tartare with a little bit of curry and celery. And then your main course were a sauteed lemon sole with some asparagus and a veal sirloin with some morels and pomme de fil.
I might say that the asparagus was both white and green, and it was alternating on the plate, and it was end to tip, and it was a gorgeous presentation. You do that very well, too, the presentation.
I think it's very important to play with the color, the texture, and then keep it light, and then a lot of vegetables. And
morels. Ooh, hoo, hoo. Ooh, la, la, I guess we say.
Yeah, and then with a touch of cream, just a touch, not too much.
Okay, then we moved on from there to... I wanted to ask about this lemon sole. It was so fresh and so light. How did you cook that? First of all, how did you buy it?
We have different supplier, but then that lemon sole is local. It comes from not too far away, from Portland, Maine. I have a supplier where we're working with since years called Brown Training, and then he sent that fish super, super fresh. And we just simply pan roasted with a touch of butter in the end in a bed of asparagus. As you say, alternate white and green. Lightly sweet and bitter, and then served with a drizzle of asparagus coulis and sauce hollandaise with some fresh herbs.
Now, we noticed that you had a lot of bright spring green. Is that because it's spring in your sauces?
Yeah, and then our crowd like to eat light, and then we have a lot of women, a lot of businessmen, and then I think it's important to eat vegetables and keep it light and fresh. So that's the way we cook it.
Now, our neighbors here were raving about an arugula salad.
Arugula garnished with some fava beans, some serrano ham, a couple of cherry tomato, olives, and balsamic vinegar. Also, my girlfriend loved that salad. I was thinking of her when I created it.
So it was made with love. Now, you were justifiably known also for your desserts. Could you walk us through some of your special desserts?
Hey, we have a pastry chef named Joshua Gripper, who worked in the company for 4 years. And then he's, again... as we do following the season, using some French classic, add a modern twist into it, and then and play them very, make very pretty plate, and then not too sweet, but then a very elegant dessert. So I think you had a tiramisu, which is, I think, very light. It was tasty, but very light. And then you also have some mango, some champagne mango on season right now, and very tasty.
And I must say that your wine list is fascinating. You have an award for this, right?
Yes, our sommelier, Arnaud De Vulder, is a young, passionate sommelier and put a lot of care into his wine list and then find good deal. And then, as I am very passionate, put a lot of interest into that wine list.
Well, we had a fabulous lunch. Could you position us geographically in the city?
You are in the middle of the city, right next to the theater district and 44th Street between 5th and 6th. And then it's nearby the Harvard Club in front of the... Royalton, next to the Algonquin in the middle of that street. So you can come for breakfast to lunch, pretty other, or late dinner. We open all day long.
And your website?
And the website is on www.danielnyc.com.
Well, again, that was really very exciting.
What a nice young man.
He certainly was.
And he has a girlfriend, but it's not over, ladies.
Yeah, I was trying to discreetly describe him when he was sitting there. Yeah, knockout.
We should not use the word chick magnet, but we might. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break because we have a long segment coming up next.
The new Die Hard Platinum presents Under the Hood with Positive and Negative. Hey, we're the new Die Hard Platinum Battery. My name is Positive. Negative, introduce yourself.
What's the point?
Well, so we can tell people that we have 40% more reserve capacity.
Yeah, and our Evolution technology can power all sorts of gadgets for your car.
Well, I think it's something to be proud of.
Yes, you're beaming, and it's giving me a migraine.
The new Die Hard Platinum Battery with Evolution technology. Available at Sears and Sears.com/platinum. More starting power, more reserve power. Die Hard. American made with Spiral AGM batteries.
Did you know that Pennsylvania has a seatbelt law? We do, and we're enforcing it. This is Colonel Miller, Commissioner of the Pennsylvania State Police. If you are stopped and cited for speeding or any other violation, and you are not wearing your seatbelt, you are liable to get two tickets. One for speeding, one for not wearing your seatbelt. That's two tickets, two fines. When it comes to seatbelts, click it or ticket. This message brought to you by Governor Edward G. Rendell, the Pennsylvania State Police, and PennDOT.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Join us for the Apollo moon landing celebration July 17th through the 21st, Apollo PA. 5 great days of family fun, featuring the award-winning Katanning Fireman's Band, games and rides for the kids, nightly entertainment, food. It's just good old summer fun. The Apollo moon landing celebration, July 17th through the 21st at Owens Field in Apollo.
Roger. We copy you down, Eagle.
A message for older drivers from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
If you find that you have to drive at night, travel in well-lighted areas when possible.
Make sure your headlights are clean.
Keep your windshield clear, both inside and out.
Avoid driving at night in the rain or other foul weather.
Also, try to avoid busy streets or other stressful situations.
It's what makes an older driver a wiser and safer driver.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
Back to On the Menu. Let's launch right into the next interview to see if we can get it all in. The next place we go is Cafe Boulou.
On the Menu has been so busy in Manhattan. We came for the Beard Awards, but we've been enjoying the best food in Manhattan. We've been doing a systematic excursion through Chef Daniel Boulou's restaurant empire. And we now have had just probably one of the most exquisite lunches we've ever had at Café Boulou. And we have the opportunity to talk to Bertrand Chamel, who is the executive chef here, who has very intense blue eyes. And he's from where in France?
So Auvergne, it's the name of the city, it's Montluçon. It's in the region of Allier, close to Vichy, where we all know, and between two very well-known water. It's Vichy, the water, and also Evian.
Now, how did you get to American New York?
Well, after doing my apprentissage or my cooking school in Auvergne, I went to for one year in the army, because we have to do the army. So I went to the army, and I wanted to travel. So I left my hometown to go to Megève. It's close to Geneva. It's the border of France and Switzerland. And I found an amazing chef who used to have a two-star Michelin restaurant in Brittany, who opens his own business. And he teach me a lot, and I travel a lot with him. And I worked for him for about 4 years. After 4 years, I moved to Jacques Chibois in south of France.
This chef's name was?
The chef was Michel Godin.
How did you find Chef Boulou?
Well, like everybody in the business, who everybody knows everyone, it's my chef who take care of me for 4 years, sent me to Jacques Chibois. And at the same time I was at Jacques Chibois, he was the associate who used to work for Daniel, just came back from New York. So we met and we become friends, and I wanted to travel. He just told me then, oh, I just came back from Daniel, Café Boulou. And on, I called Daniel and I asked him if he needed the cook. And I got my 3 months after, I got my visa to come to U.S.
Now, how did you end up as the executive chef at one of his top restaurants?
Well, I think the good thing, it's the difference between France and U.S., I would say. Not only working for a French chef, but in general in U.S., it's a chef get more, the cooks getting involved in the service, involved in creativity. And I was very passionate to work for Daniel, and Daniel pushed me, like push everybody else, to be creative. And it's true that after our shift, we tried to stay more and doing some special for VIP. And day after day, you just make special and make more and more. And then it led you more work to do. And you become chef de partie, then you become sous chef. And one day you show him then you can manage a kitchen. Then you become the chef.
How old are you?
I'm 32 years old.
Oh, old man. Yeah. Very experienced, right. The French cooking that you're doing now is, I mean, it really comes out of Danielle. But tell me how different it is from what you grew up with.
Well, from what I grew up with, it's I do a little more of my own cooking, more in the winter or in the fall. What I do during the spring and summer, it's I'm working more on where I'm usually work the most. It's south of France, lighter fish. I cook a lot with olive oil. In my region, it's mostly pork, beef, and butter.
Chef Bertrand Chamel, people have this funny idea that, in fact, because it's a Daniel restaurant, the Café Bellu is overpriced and expensive. This isn't true, is it?
No, I think it's a wrong perspective of Café Bellu. I think Daniel, when he puts his name on the menu or on the restaurant, it's more about the quality of what we're serving than more about the price. And I think the controversy, it's we have a 30 course menu, $30 two course menu for lunch, and also a $38. And he showed then, you know, we care about everyone to come to try Café Bellu. And I think you can come for lunch for $38, or you also can come at night for a tasting menu. And that's why it's the diversity of our restaurant. It's to try to attract everybody, business people, health people, young crew, try to learn about food. And I think that's why it's very important to have a diversity of prices.
Well, we watched as everyone walked in to lunch, and people can walk in even without reservations. So I would say make a reservation. But the place was jammed. We came for lunch at 1:30, and people just kept coming and coming and coming. It's a wonderful place, and everybody's very well received. About the food, I really wanted you to explain some of the things, especially prepared things, but they were almost all things on your menu. Could you talk about some of the items we ate?
Well, first, we're doing some spring salad right now, so we're going to involve more about the spring menu. But also to start, we usually start with a couple amuse-bouche. So today you add a little risotto bowl. It's a spring risotto. Then we do with fennel. It can change all the time. You know, the spring, we try to change the menu so often. But you also add a foie gras torchon on a homemade brioche. Then you also add a little gravlax salmon. It's marinated in pastis. It'll give you like this little bit anise flavor. And we add also a little artichoke hummus, because Café Bellu, it's not only French, it's not only American. We also have tradition, we have la saison. It's a four-section menu. So we try to give you a little taste of a little bit of everything from our menu.
You know, I mean, I was really amazed when I saw the different sections of the special menus, because they seemed each one had a different direction. Now, of course, we tasted something out of every menu, but what do these four things represent?
Well, one is the la tradition, means it's traditional French dishes. The other one is le potager, means from the garden. It's more or less what we can get from the market at the season, but it's also vegetarian because, you know, we also have la saison, or it's everything is seasonal. So now we're doing spring, and we have also le voyage, means we travel. It could be any country in the world.
Tell us individually some of these dishes that we ate today.
Well, first you start with the main lobster salad. That's from our spring salad section. It's a little, what we do, it's with the claw, we do a little tartare with a fresh fennel. And we confit the fennel, and we top with a little carpaccio of lobster. Then on the other, you had a tuna tartare. Tuna tartare is from our voyage. It represents a Japanese tartare with sesame crackers. We also have a grilled scallion vinaigrette. To follow, you got from La Saison, handmade garganelli. It's a little version of a smaller penne. And it's made with braised morel, pea leaves, a little bit of Parmesan cheese, something light, very good for spring. And also for potager, or could be also vegetarian, it's a barigoule risotto. So we cook very slowly artichoke with a lot of fennel stick, asparagus, cilantro, coriander seeds, and we're doing a risotto. And at the end, it's finished with mascarpone, a little bit of Parmesan, it's very light.
Now I understand why it was so light. It also had mascarpone in it. I'm joking. We also had the Moroccan lamb trio, which was wonderful. And the fish. What fish did we have?
Well, you had the East Coast halibut, because right now it's a great season to get our East Coast fish. So you got a pan-seared halibut on a bed of chanterelle sabayon and fennel confit. For the voyage, you got the Moroccan lamb trio. The one is a kefka. It's a little bread fried with a little bit of ground lamb inside. The second, it's a filet. It's a saddle of lamb roasted and confit slowly in olive oil. And the third one is a neck confit. So we do a ragout with that. It brings you like a little bit of Moroccan flavor.
Now, the neck, this is the hottest cut today. Listeners, take note. Neck of lamb is the hot item. It doesn't sound very good, but it's very tasty. Do you have a special pastry chef? Because your pastries were just like divine.
Yes, we have a corporate pastry chef who's taking care of all the Daniel's restaurant. He's very involved also to change our dessert following the season. And right now, we have Napoleon of raspberry with a licorice ice cream. We also have a pudding from England for voyage with a little carpaccio of pineapple and cilantro. The pudding is made with date. You have the sweetness, you have the pineapple, the acidity of the pineapple, and the little touch of, could be sound strange, but we have the cilantro in it that brings a little savory touch.
I had this raspberry thing, and then I got to talking to Daniel, and I never got to eat the rest of it. I hope Peter did, because it was really delicious. We've had a wonderful time, and I can't thank you enough for talking to us. Bertrand, have a great voyage in the United States. I hope you stay here for a long time.
Yes, I will.
Chef Bertrand, I asked you, why do you like New York? And how is it different from being a chef in France? And you told me all kinds of wonderful things about freedom and creativity. Could you just go back and tell our listeners some of what you have by way of ideas?
Well, the greatest part of New York City and U.S., it's the freedom of creativity. And why I found myself to New York and love this place is because I work for a lot of big chefs in France, but it gets very restrictive when they let you be creative in the kitchen, because it's 30 or 40 people in the kitchen. Only the chef can be the creative in France. But in New York City, the greatest, it's when you work for big chef, and like Daniel Boulou is very great at it, it's lead these cooks to be creative and to be involved in the business. Means I always ask my cooks, what do you want to do for tomorrow? What do you want to, which special you want to do? What you would be interesting to cook? Because I'm not the only one. We're a big team. And that's why I love to work with Daniel, is because I started at Daniel, I was working soup station, but I was staying in the afternoon doing terrines for VIP, staying to do special for VIP. And, you know, it's a restaurant with a lot of energy, and when Daniel asks you something, you better to be ready. That's why I kept from Daniel. It's to get my young cooks to be creative and to be involved in the service, involved on the menu. That's the most important thing. That's why I love New York. New York City, it's a big, big competitivity, and you have to be creative. You have to change a lot. Not one person can do it. It's a whole team.
Your team works really beautifully well, as we've experienced, and I love your ideas. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jazzin' Around with David J is next on The Edge, AM 1550.
It all happened so fast. It was loud and scary, and I was trapped.
Katie is a kindergarten teacher in Pennsylvania. She was a passenger in a car struck head-on by a reckless driver.
That's when I met my guardian angel. His name is Sean, and he's a paramedic. Sean was there for me when I needed him. He knew just what to do, and he knew the right things to say.
Choose a career in emergency medical services. Call toll-free 877-PA-MEDIC. That's 877-PA-MEDIC.
Pennsylvania needs more guardian angels. I had mine, and he made all the difference.
I know I need to pay attention to my health, but I just can't seem to find the time. Between rushing to work and taking care of the kids, there's not much time left over for me. So I decided to start small by eating more fruits and vegetables and being more active. And then I got the family to make some changes too. We started by keeping a bowl of fresh fruit on the counter, and I limit the amount of sweet snacks I keep in the house. I've also found some creative ways to add more vegetables to our meals. We're taking more walks, and on the weekends, we head down to the pool at the rec center. It doesn't happen every day, but it does happen. You don't have to change your entire life to be healthier. Just make some simple changes and include your family. You'll see how easy and fun it can be.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.